Myrtle Beach is the beach. 60 miles of bright sand, water, and a wealth of wonderful music playing day and night. You can step into a simple beach bar and discover a surprising level of exciting musical talent. A place to kick back and groove to the enticing soundtrack of the most unexpected vacations around. With nothing but good vibes floating through the warm ocean air. Plan your own music-filled trip to America's Jukebox at visitmyrtlebeach.com.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Prepare yourself for the only talk radio show you'll want to turn up.
Crank this thing.
Sirius XM Pandora presents the place where your hard rock and metal voice can still be heard.
You bet your ass, baby.
Unfiltered, uncensored, say whatever you want.
Hit the record button. Anything can happen, you know?
I know that ain't nobody out there came to be mellow tonight, now did you? I say there ain't nobody. I'll say there ain't nobody not out there that even wants to be a little bit mellow. Now is there? Anybody wants to get mellow, you can turn around and get the fuck out of here, all right?
This is the Trunk Nation Podcast. With host Eddie Trunk.
What's up, everybody? It's Eddie Trunk, and welcome to another episode of the Eddie Trunk Podcast. New episodes every Thursday on any of your favorite podcast platforms. Be sure to subscribe so you do not miss an episode. And as I tell you guys every week on the podcast, all the interviews you hear originated on my SiriusXM radio show, which is Trunk Nation, and heard Monday through Friday live, 3 to 5 Eastern, on Faction Talk, SiriusXM channel 103, or anytime on demand on the SiriusXM app. There's also a nightly re-air of the show on 103 at midnight Eastern, 9 Pacific. If you're only listening to this podcast and you can get SiriusXM radio, you're only getting a tiny taste of what I do on the radio live every day. So please come on board and join us for daily rock talk. And I got a great way for you to sample the show totally free. You can get a free 3-month subscription to SiriusXM, no credit card required. All you got to do is go to SiriusXM.com/Eddie Trunk. SiriusXM.com/Eddie Trunk, no credit card needed. 3 free months of SiriusXM radio. Listen on your app, and this way you can get caught up and hear what we're doing on the radio every day and get the full picture and come on board and join us. All right, so speaking of interviews from SiriusXM, about a week and a half ago, I was in the LA studios doing some shows, and I was joined by a bunch of great guests. If you do have SiriusXM, you can see video of the interview you're about to hear on the SiriusXM app. And the interview we're bringing to you this week from Los Angeles is with Scott Ian of Anthrax, who had his son Revel with him, who is 12 years old and already an accomplished musician in a couple of different bands. And also in studio, Corey Taylor, best known, of course, as the lead singer in Slipknot, who is about to embark on a tour in support of his second solo album, CMFT2, or CMF2, I think is actually the full name. But anyway, that record is coming out next month. Corey was in LA, Scott lives in LA, and we all got together and had a great time shooting the shit about all sorts of stuff in their respective careers and, of course, the world of rock music. So without further ado, we take you to the SiriusXM LA studios. We start with Scott Ian and his son, who gets involved, and then Corey Taylor joins for a good part of the second half of the interview. Hope you enjoy this. Great catching up with these guys and having them on together, and happy to bring it to you this week as the Eddie Trunk Podcast. So how are you, man?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. What have you been up to? You said you were in New York for a while.
Yeah, summer vacation. We're not out this summer, which is a rare thing.
Why is that? By choice or?
No, because we're making, well, there's two main reasons. We started making a record and Charlie's out with Pantera.
Oh, that's right. Your drummer's not around. I forgot he's in Pantera.
But even if that wasn't the case, if Charlie wasn't out with Pantera at this point, I think we would have taken this summer off, because even since shows started up again for us in 2001, it wouldn't have made any sense for us to be out this summer. We really needed to start making an album so we can then come back, let's say a year from now, and start on a new cycle, because, you know, it's been 7 years since the last record. We did the 40th anniversary thing. Like, you know, it's time for new music.
I was going to ask you about that, how long it's been since For All Kings. 7 years?
7 years.
Jesus.
I know.
That's insane.
Revel put it on in the car the other day, and I was like, I don't think I've heard this album in 7 years. It's like it's, and it felt new to me, which was cool, because yeah. I haven't listened to it in so long.
Scott's son, Revel, is here. And for those that don't know, Revel is a musician himself. And
yes.
Revel, how old are you now?
I'm 12.
You're 12. Anybody that's seen Scott's social media has seen Scott and Revel jam, and it's incredible. And I don't know what it was, 4 or 5 months ago.
Well, I'm not actually in that band anymore.
Okay, well, the band I saw you play at the bowling alley, that's not happening anymore.
No.
Is there any lineup changes?
He's
already dealing with upheaval in his career at 12.
Yes.
I have band practice today. I play guitar in a band called Reject Your Reality.
So now you're playing guitar.
Yeah.
So because when I walked in, I had no idea you were going to be there or your dad was going to be there. And I was there with a friend to see another band. And there you came in and got ready to go do your thing. And I thought it was pretty killer. But you've moved on from that.
Yeah.
Now you are going to play. You're not sure what you're going to play. Guitar, drums. You're going to play both, or you just.
Oh, no. I'll do anything.
It's crazy. Can you play bass, too?
Yeah.
Yeah, everything.
Scott, did you teach him all this?
No. Obviously not drums. And no, guitar, totally self-taught. I mean, once in a while.
Well, you kind of told me to play with a pick, so I started playing with a pick when I first, you know what I mean?
Like, right, when you were really little. Yeah, like when he was really little and didn't really understand how any of it worked. But he just sits and learns songs and writes songs, all day long, basically.
Riffs?
Yeah, riffs all day long.
12.
Just, yeah.
Jeez. And what about drums? Scott, can you play drums?
Terribly.
So
did you
learn drums self-taught, too? Did you just figure it out, or did you get lessons?
Pretty much. I had lessons when I was younger, and starting from, like, when I was 9 years old, I took lessons with a drummer named Thomas Lang.
Okay.
For, like, 2 years.
I need
to get back into it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
wow.
He plays every day. We built a studio at our house so he could play anytime. And, yeah, it's if it's not drums, it's guitar. If it's not guitar, it's bass. It's just music constantly, which is the best.
So do you want to, I know you're still only 12 years old, but is your goal to be a musician like your dad for a living?
Yes.
Is that what you want to do?
Yes.
It's a tough road. You ready for it?
Sure.
The ups, the downs, the travel, all that sort of stuff. The problem today, and Scott, you tell me if you agree with this, but, you know, back when you were starting, when Anthrax was starting, when we were all starting out, the whole goal was to get a record deal, because that was the gateway into being able to make a record.
Yeah, you couldn't put an album out yourself. No. You couldn't physically make a record. You couldn't do any of that stuff.
I'd say that all the time. I think people forget that. Like, you physically could not produce and distribute music.
In the car today, we were just talking about, we're going to start, like, actually building the studio.
The control room.
The control room. And we are saying, because I'm super into Black Flag right now, we are saying we could make, he said you could make an album just on your phone. That sounds better than any Black Flag album.
Technically, from a production standpoint, that is absolutely possible.
But here's the downside of all of this, as I see it. So there's the upside. Kid like Revel, 12 years old, do whatever he wants, put music out. You and your dad can put stuff on social media, you guys playing. It's great. But the problem is, so can everybody.
Yeah.
And that makes the pool, like it used to be, like when your dad got a record deal, that was like a whole hurdle you reached. You separated yourself from the pack. You had arrived. Now you're, everybody's in that same pool, and it just got 1,000 times bigger. So it's like, it's almost like, I don't know, Scott, you tell me if you agree with me, but it's almost like the idea of selling music is gone. It's just, no, we have it and listen to it. Because, you know, how many people do we know, Scott, that we run into and they're like I get calls all the time. People say to me stuff like, whatever happened to a band? Like, what name the band? And they put out like a record every other year for the last 20 years. These people just like disappear. They checked out.
You know, I think, look, it's obviously we grew up without, we're from the pre-internet era. And, you know, I see now the tools and the assets people have to, but anything you want to learn how to play on guitar, you just go on YouTube. Anything you need to know how to do, you can just go on YouTube and learn how to do it. And, but then anyone can do that, but not everyone is going to then take that knowledge or take what they just learned and be able to transform it into something better, into something great, into something brilliant or genius or different or new, groundbreaking. So I think, yes, there's a much larger pool, 100%. But at the same time, I'm a true believer in the best stuff is always going to rise somehow. Just like back in our day, in 1983, there were probably 1,000 dudes easily who were better than me on guitar. There were probably 1,000 bands that wrote great songs that no one ever heard because there was no internet. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's the same now. You could be the sickest shredder sitting in your room at home in your gamer chair, and you may be technically an incredible guitar player, but does it mean you can write a song? Does it mean you could ever leave that room in your house? That, I mean, some people can't.
Which is exactly my point. My point is there's a ton of people flooding the channels that should, that are just congesting things and making things oversaturated that probably shouldn't be. You can't fault somebody just having fun.
No, of course.
But at the same token, it's like it makes the good stuff even harder to find.
Possibly, but that's why people still, there are still people out there doing those jobs, trying to weed out. Back in the day when you'd have a pile of tapes, cassette tapes, or and then CDs on your desk and like, geez, I got to listen to all 50 of these things to try and find a band. You got people doing the same thing now, scouring TikTok, scouring YouTube, looking for what's the next thing, who's going to set the world on fire, whether it's hardcore or pop, whatever it is. That's, I mean, Mike Gitter, a guy that we've both known for a million years, he's still one of those dudes. He's still out there doing it. And, you know, there are people who still do that. They just have a lot more shit to weed through.
Yeah, but do you think that, and I've talked to some people about this who do that now, do you think that these people are really listening for what is good, or are they just looking at the analytics? Because so much of it is like, even talk to me unless you have X amount of streams
or views. Of course, we all know that exists, and that's basically the nature of the game these days. But there still are guys, and there still are people, there still are men, women, who their passion is what matters first. Because like, I know people that do A&R that still, they fall in love with a band, whether or not that's going to mean anything to whatever label it is they're working for. That's above their pay grade, but they will still be passionate and they'll still go to battle for that band, you know. But yeah, you're right. So much is analytics. I don't know what to even compare that to back in the 80s when, let's say, I mean, we were lucky. We found Johnny and we were able to get a deal at Megaforce, and that was our stepping stone, you know, to what the major record deal, the major label deal, which was, of course, everybody's goal back then. That was the chalice.
And
that was the holy grail.
You just getting Johnny on board was not. Went at him at an IHOP or something, told me, or whatever.
Yeah, because he didn't have a pot to piss in like us. He just had an idea and the heart to go do it somehow. But back then, you know, you had the gatekeepers who, you know, like we were just a bunch of kids playing what we didn't even know was thrash metal yet. And on this indie label, us and Metallica, and then, you know, we sell out the Roseland Ballroom in August of 1984, and just so happened that night you had Elektra Atlantic and Island were all in the building, and Metallica signed to Elektra, and Raven signed to Atlantic, and we signed to Island, and that was all pretty much based on the fact that who are these three bands that just sold, you know, 4,000 tickets at Roseland? We should at least give this a chance. It seems like the kids are into this now, you know. Mm. But you also you had people like Michael Alago and other A&R people who knew that what we were doing at that time meant something and was going to become the next big thing.
Yeah, and of course Alago would go and take Metallica to Elektra. And,
right.
And then how I'm trying to remember this, like, because even though Metallica was obviously West Coast, the roots were in New York and New Jersey at that time because they were relocated here.
Right.
Or there.
Yeah.
I'm saying here like I'm home. But Slayer, like, trying to remember, because I remember Slayer playing Lemours early on, like around Hell Awaits and all of that.
Yeah.
But really early on, they weren't really on the radar for us in the New York area, right?
Or they were for me because I was a tape trader.
Yeah.
And I would go to Bleecker Bob's and buy anything I could get my hands on that even like had the slightest scent of being extreme metal.
Yeah.
So I already knew about like the Mike Varney Shrapnel Records, that kind of stuff, right, coming from the West Coast. And then Metal Blade, I knew of very early on because they put out that comp album.
Metal
that
Massacre.
That had Metallica on it. And then I believe had Slayer on the second one, maybe.
Yeah.
So Slayer was on my radar from way early.
Do you remember the first thing you heard from
first
Slayer?
First thing I heard from Slayer?
From the tape? Do you remember what
I
you got?
No, I don't remember.
Did you like it immediately?
Yeah, yeah.
You did?
Yeah.
See, because it's funny. I've told this story before about when Johnny literally... So this year... I'm going to talk to you about this off the air, actually, because my 30th anniversary in radio, you played.
Uh-huh.
We had that party in Times Square.
Right.
And you got an Ace and Peter played, and it was this whole great jam.
Yeah.
So this year, speaking of time flying, this year is 40 years.
That was 10 years ago.
10 years ago.
Oh, my God.
So you were part of that big jam that we had 10 years ago. And then I don't know if you were at it, but the one for 25 years of radio, which was 15 years ago, was Priest. I don't know if you were in town or you came to that Priest play.
I don't think I was there.
But the point of me bringing this up is that 40 years ago, Johnny Z, we're talking about the late, great Johnny Z, founder of Megaforce, literally knocked on my door
mm-hmm.
as a kid out of high school starting a metal show in radio in New Jersey and would not leave until I played this band that he believed in and that he had risked everything for and needed to be able to tell he got played on the radio.
Right.
And it was Metallica.
Yep.
And, I was aware of who they were just because of the tapes going around and everything, but I'd never really heard them. And he had the 12-inch single for Jump in the Fire.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, John, leave it. I'll listen to it. I'll see maybe next week or whatever. Because 83, I'm on the radio. My hands are shaking because I'm nervous.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
I'm still new to it. And back then, there's no computers. There's no CDs. There's mm-hmm. no nothing. You're playing vinyl.
Yeah.
You're queuing up records with a needle, and you got to make sure it's the right spot, and it doesn't skip, and the record's clean. So I had a lot, it was a lot to deal with, and he wouldn't leave. He's like, by the way, I got to be able to say I had it played. Please play.
That was Johnny.
So I just wanted to get him out of the room.
Yeah.
And I played Jump in the Fire. And people say to me all the time, like, did you hear, like, the future? Did you hear what was going to become one of the biggest bands in the world? I was like, no.
Yeah.
Like, you know me forever. I was into Kiss and Van Halen. Sure, like, what the hell was that?
Meanwhile, you're thinking, I got 3.5 minutes to find another song to play.
Well, Jump in the Fire is like 6.5 minutes.
Oh, is it?
Or six, I think it's longer, at least 4 or 5.
Right.
Not that short. But yeah, I'm just like, get on to the next. But people say to me all the time, like, what'd you think when you heard it? I was like, I don't know. Like,
you should have a story. I knew it then. I knew it. The clouds parted and the light shined down and said they are going to be the biggest band in the world.
Like that thing, what's that quote from the guy who's now, John Landau, who's now Bruce Springsteen's manager, but was a writer at the time. The first time he heard Springsteen, he goes, I heard the future of rock and roll or something. I couldn't say that. I could say that if I lied, but I was like, I thought I heard a car crash. Like, I couldn't process what that was. But you came from a different, like, even though around the same age, you came from a different thing because you were also into the more extreme stuff. You were into hardcore. You were into other stuff.
Right.
So for me, I wasn't. So I can understand how it was a little bit of an easier connection because you were just looking for the more extreme stuff.
I can say that when Metallica first came to New York and Danny Lilker and I met them at the music building in Jamaica, Queens, because that's where Anthrax had a rehearsal room, and Johnny had gotten them a rehearsal room there so they would have a place to jam all the time because they were still rehearsing and getting ready to go record Kill 'Em All. This is when Dave was still in the band. And we would sit in the room. They set up in their room, and they did something different than I had ever seen. Every band that I knew that would rehearse, you'd set up your gear like a show, like a backline. And then you'd stand in front of it and play. Metallica set up theirs. You had the drums and then the amps in like a circle, and they stood in the middle with the amps around them. So we would sit in, like me and Lilker, it would be like late at night because you could play in that building 24/7. And we would just be sitting in that room, in that circle, while they were playing the songs that were going to be on Kill 'Em All. And no vocals even because there was no PA. And, just them playing those songs instrumentally. And I could say I had never heard or felt anything like that. The guitar riffs, the tightness of the playing between James and Dave Mustaine, the energy of it, the aggression. I can't even get started on Cliff. I mean, nobody had ever even this freak, like headbanging in rehearsal like a maniac, right, with his wah pedal.
He even did it in rehearsal with no real audience?
Out of his mind.
Really?
Yeah. Unless he just looked at like me and Lilker and like Charlie. We were his audience, you know? But I remember like whatever hair I had on my arms at that time, standing up, just being like, this is insane. Like, this is, and I'm not going to say I immediately said they're the next Iron Maiden or Judas Priest. No, but I will say I had never felt or anything like that. Anything. Still to this day, sitting there in that room, in that little circle, feeling those guys play those songs was an experience unlike any other. I mean, I'm not one of those guys, but yeah, there was magic in the air, you know. It wasn't that. It was just four guys who were so intensely focused on their goal, and the energy that was coming out of those amps, I mean, from their right hands, was just, it was mind-blowing.
I talk to Lars about this all the time, because for you, people like you and I that were there so early on, I even though you felt that energy, and even though I felt like, wow, something's going on here, but I don't really know what this is, I don't think any of us, including the band, thought 40 years later we'd be sitting here and they're going out playing multiple nights at stadiums around the world.
Yeah. I mean it's top three, four bands on the planet, right? Yeah. I mean, arguably.
Yeah. So I don't think anybody could have anticipated the commercial success making music like that. You touched on Anthrax doing a record. How far along are you?
Not far. But we did, we had a session here in LA. Charlie, Frankie, and I tracked 9 songs. I finished the guitars on those, right before we went to New York. So I don't know, sometime end of June, something like that. Frankie is currently in LA tracking bass on those 9 songs.
Saw him last night with Jay.
Right. I'm going, I'm not going to say where, but I'm going to the studio Friday. Since I've had time, like a month, to live with my guitar tracks, I've heard like lots of things that I think are very cool to kind of add. So I'm going on Friday and spending a day doing some overdubs. Donae is already working on solos back east at his home studio, and I am working on lyrics. So I think we're well into it. Let's put it that way. There's going to be another recording session October, maybe November. Charlie's got these 2 windows to get in because we have another 4 or 5 we want to track. And we're hoping, you know, if things just stay on the very loose schedule we have, I'd like to think by Christmas, New Year's, we'll have most of this wrapped up. Maybe not mixed, but certainly all recorded by then.
The last thing would be Joey singing, obviously, right?
That'll start. My goal is to have 3 songs ready for him to start on next month.
Oh, okay.
And then from Joey, it doesn't take him very long once he kind of wraps his head around it and, you know, kind of runs it through his filter, he's a fast worker. So once he starts, it doesn't take long. It's more, I think, the onus on me of being happy with the lyrics I'm writing. And because I actually had like 3 or 4 songs written months ago, and then I revisited them like a month ago and I threw them all in the garbage. I was like, this is crap. So, but I'm in a much better place with that now.
Do you, direction wise, anything you can tell the people listening as to like where it's going? Is it pick up kind of like where For All Kings and Worship Music, that, you know, that sort of thread?
It's, you know, anything you say is, what am I going to say?
The greatest record we've ever written.
You know,
no, I don't mean
it's
that.
Not, it's just... not done yet, so I can't say that. I can't say that cliche yet. It's
right,
not finished.
Right.
but it's certainly of the 9 we've tracked so far, and of course the rough kind of demos we have of some of the stuff we haven't tracked with drums yet. From a riff point of view, it's definitely, it's riffs with all capital letters. Like if you were going to write, you would write riffs in all capitals with an exclamation point. That the riffs are killer. It's very riff centric. There's a lot of faster up tempo material, certainly. Rebel, what do you love it? He's been listening to these songs. What do you think of it?
It's like worship music mixed with Sound of White Noise.
Interesting. All right. That's an interesting blend.
No Among the Living thrown in there?
You always have to go with the biggest record, Revel. Yeah. You got to interject that. It's always like every Kiss record's the next Destroyer.
Right.
Like, but all the riffs sound a lot like Sound of White Noise to me.
Huh.
Really? Did you realize that, Scott?
To me, no. I find it, I think there's an intensity way more so than Sound of White Noise it in my brain.
Like, songs like
Invisible Sound of White Noise. Yeah,
and This Is Not an Exit.
Uh-huh.
Some of the songs for the new album remind me of those
songs. Those are super heavy
or
songs.
Or Room for One More.
Uh-huh.
I had dinner with John Bush last night. He'd be happy to hear this, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think the riffs are more intense than Sound of White Noise, but I also am in the band,
like,
and
the
it's hard for me
it.
To. The vibe.
It's more groovy.
More groovy. Okay.
Right. She reviews,
cool.
Scott.
There you go.
Your son keeping you in line.
Yes.
That's awesome.
It's not like the full thrash, like the.
Right. Well, we're not. I mean, it's not. It's, yeah, it's not going to. It's definitely not that.
Your dad's a lot older now than when he wrote Gung Ho. You know, it's a different.
But there is. But
yeah, there is.
I will say there is a song. I won't say any titles yet because it's still probably a working title. There's definitely one song. It's the fastest thing we've ever done. Another song that we haven't recorded yet that's also in the vein more of a Gung Ho or a Caught in a Mosh. Like, because Charlie and I talk all the time. I'm like, you know, we need, we still need something that's like a 3.5 minute just ripper, you know, like something like that. And then, of course, after the fact, then we come up with something like that. And I'm like, hey, I forgot I'm 60 now, and now I have to play this song for the next 3 years. Just make my life harder.
I talk about that all the time with singers, like younger bands that I have in, and they're singing like this crazy stuff. And I'm like, you realize you might be painting yourself into a corner here, man, because in 20, 30 years, you have to figure out, you're going to be talking about tuning down and trying to figure out how you're going to do that. So
yeah,
like, you just live in the moment.
We're very blessed to have a singer that,
yes,
actually, when he first came back to the band in 2010, we were still playing in E flat, a half step down from where on the older stuff, the catalog from the 80s, the original Joey stuff. When John was in the band, we were playing that stuff E flat instead of E. And then when Joey came back, there was one day we were dicking around at soundcheck. I think it was on that tour with us and Slayer and Megadeth in like the fall of 2010. I think I was like maybe playing the Medusa riff or something. And I had a guitar that happened to be in standard tuning, and Joey started singing, and it was like, it was like this bright light. Like it just, you know, because I hadn't heard it like that in so long live. And we were all like, wow, that sounds so killer. He's like, yeah, you guys could tune normal. That's how I sing them, you know, even when I was playing them in my solo stuff. So we tuned back up and we never looked back. You know, 13 years later, we're still in standard tuning.
Joey, in my opinion, does not get the credit he deserves for how great he still is.
He doesn't.
As a singer and a frontman.
Yeah.
I mean, if you saw the 40th anniversary, the production you guys did, the stage, the video, the ramps, I mean, everything, the set list, I've said this to you before, and I'm not just saying this because you guys are friends. There's very, very few bands that I could honestly, a younger person comes up to me, someone like Revel's age or a little older, and says, you know, hey, what's this band Anthrax like? You know, most bands that somebody would approach me about and it'd been around 40 plus years, I'd say, oh, yeah, you should have saw them back in the day. You know, you should have saw them, you know, when they were really good, you know, and they're kind of mailing it in, or they're not that good anymore. The singer can't sing. Honestly, with you guys, I mean, I've been there since day one. I mean, it's as good as it's ever been. It really is. It's incredible. And a lot of that is of course, you guys, but also him. The fact that he still looks, from the stage, you know, in the audience, he still looks the same, too, which is crazy.
Yeah, it's, I agree. The band is, I mean, the fact that we got Donae on stage, right, who's, you know, to me, the best lead guitar player we've ever had. So, to me, it's better live now than it's ever been, I think.
Yeah,
you know,
it's incredible.
Frankie's ability on stage, his stage presence, his physicality, his singing, everything about it is, you know, it's just... his energy. I still look lucky for me. My knees, my back are still, you know, somehow I've kept myself in good enough shape to still be able to jump and move the way I do on stage. And I've always looked at Angus as kind of like my touchstone. I'm like, well, if Angus is still banging his head, that means I've got at least 10 more years. You know what I mean? So, I feel the same way about it. Our love for what we do has not waned in any way, shape, or form. And, you know, and on the other side of it, even, you know, commercially or whatever word you want to use for it, but, you know, things have only gotten better for us in the last 15 years. We're bigger now than we've been in forever. And, you know, because of the fans out there coming out to see us. And that last run we did with us in Black Label was incredible.
Yeah.
You know, we were looking around at some of these shows. My guitar tech Armando turned around to me before a show one night, like in Western Canada, like, and he said, when did we become an arena band?
Mm.
Like, we were playing hockey rinks, you know, like, just like amazing.
Yeah, yeah, no, it was, the shows were great. It was a great bill for people.
Hey, wrap it up, I want to join you.
Somebody get a security in here. Corey Taylor's busting through, crashing in.
Won't go to school again,
Kiss started in
I took it right there.
3 seconds he went right to Kiss.
Here we go.
3 seconds. Do you know that Corey Taylor is obsessed with the Elder, Scott?
I know.
Listen, I've cracked the code.
Well,
we're
going to
talk about it later. Oh, no. I don't know if their code exists, but in my head, there's a code. Like, I've gone Illuminatus on this thing, man, and it's really, it's so bizarre.
I've read a 500-page book just on the
Elder. I have it, The Odyssey.
Yes.
I bought it. Of course I did, because I'm an idiot.
We both need help. Scott is, like me, a massive Kiss fan.
Right.
Where do you land on the Elder, Scott?
There are some good
riffs. Get on
mic.
We can't hear you, Corey.
Oh, you can hear me.
My Kiss window was 1975. Well, I should say first album through the solo albums.
Okay.
And it was pretty tightly closed after that. I will say I did get the Elder back then. When did that come out?
80? So the Elder was 81, right? Or 81, because 81, that's right, because Unmasked was 80. Yeah.
I was full on, you know, by then it was full on Motorhead.
First Maiden record.
And that makes sense, because then you can kind of see, it's like, okay, I'm starting, I've found hard rock and everything. Now it's like, okay, I need something harder and faster, right? So, yeah, so that makes sense.
But, Corey, you only came to The Elder recently. This is a new revelation.
It was an album that I'd heard it when I was a kid, and I was like, what in the, you know, what is this? And then I kind of got away from it, you know, because I was into, you know, punk and thrash and all that stuff. But then coming back to it later, honestly, after hanging out with all you crazy people, you know, I really go
because Corey's
right
younger,
back.
So we have to corrupt him
well,
a little
that,
bit.
Well, not that. Well, okay.
You
I'm,
are.
It's fine. I'll be 50 this year, so I'm not like young, young.
59 and with less than a week.
Well, you look it, though.
I thank you.
Yeah. let me just say this. I don't want people to think that, like, I mean, to me, those years of Kiss from like 75 to 78,
dude.
It still means to me
right.
exactly the same as it did back then. All these years later,
right.
I could put on any one of those records, and I'm just as excited by it. Like, it just for me, it holds, it has such a hold on me. But it was very much that time period only. I mean, come on, look, I've got this.
Oh, dude,
I've
you got
this
it.
On my
yeah,
leg.
It's crazy.
Gene Simmons takes up 1/4 of my body. I mean, I think that's all I need to say. There's no, I'm a card carrying member right. in the Kiss Army.
Right.
But I am inherently interested in all the bands that I like in the periods where they were kind of unraveling. I find that in retrospect really interesting
sure.
periods.
Right.
Like Aerosmith, Rockin' a Hard Place, Night in the Ruts period.
Oh, dude. Yeah.
Really interesting.
Right, right, right.
You know, for you guys, even for Anthrax,
sure.
you know, like the Stomp 442 period right. and, you know, that stuff, the, you know, Inside Out and Fueled and uh-huh. all that stuff that was going on. And then the record with Joey N. Bush. I mean, all that stuff to me is really interesting when I look back on people like with Sabbath, there's, you know, Technical Ecstasy, Never Say Die. People
right.
say that's the end. That were right. horrible records. Well, is there some good stuff in
there's
there?
There's some moments.
So The Elder right. is that, you know, that clump of time for Kiss.
Sure.
Right.
In retrospect, but I find it interesting. So you got into it later.
Right.
You're like,
right.
sounds
so
like
I've
the same
able,
thing. You kind of dissected it.
I've been able to go back and listen to it with a certain type of filter that it's like, I know the history. I know, like you, that 6-year period in the 70s, they were bulletproof.
Yeah.
Man. I mean, they were the greatest, one of the greatest American rock bands. And they really, to me, were the progenitors of modern rock, I don't want, not commercialism, but creating a brand and making that brand what it is.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Nobody had done that before. And they took it and they wrote the book. They set mm-hmm. the standard for it. But the difference is that the music backed it up. Like you got, like even after, you know, you're like, if you got into it as a kid and you were like, oh my God, they're superheroes. They've got action figures. They've got comic books and whatnot. You could go back and go, man, this music still just 100% smokes,
yeah.
you know, like it's that, that's how good they were. But I've been able to go back and listen to some of their stuff. A lot of the stuff in the 80s, actually, you listen to it, like they catch
the
a lot
Jericho
of heat.
Jericho era, as I call it.
They catch a lot of heat, but technically speaking, some of those riffs are really, really good, man.
Yeah,
like,
no, I like
a lot.
Really
good stuff.
I was there through 2000. I mean,
right.
I'm everything. Carnival of Souls, everything.
Oh, dude, Carnival of Souls is dark as hell.
Record,
if you didn't
yeah.
know it was Kiss, you'd be like, what the yeah. hell is this?
Yeah, no, I'm in on all of it.
Right.
We could easily eat up the remainder of this show.
We should probably sell
should probably,
stuff that we have.
We probably yes. should sell Corey's record, even though he was on not long ago
right.
for the first song when we did we had... we had some fun in my Vegas place.
Right.
There's now another track
right.
that has come out.
Right.
The album is inching closer, September 15th.
Yeah, man.
For CMF2.
Yeah.
And the new song, Post Traumatic Blues,
right.
which, with Scott Ian sitting here, I must say, riffage-wise, tone feels a little Anthrax-ish
oh,
to me.
Very, very. I mean, when I was writing that, like, you could almost feel the Anthrax coming out. I mean, it's got, I mean, they're one of my biggest influences as well, you know? So this is really like a chance for me to kind of show that and share it with the audience. I mean, nobody has really ever been able to, like, not only just, like, drop in crazy breakdowns and stuff, but I mean, just tear through songs and then give people that extra punch like Anthrax did, man. Like they were some of the best at it. So there's definitely an Anthrax like influence on this song for me, especially when I was writing it. And then the way we put the layers on it on top as well really has really inspired by Scott and company.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. have you
awesome.
Heard it, Scott?
Yes.
Yeah.
And
yes.
are you going to go after him for publishing? Or
I've already got calls in. We're fine.
I'm going to call my lawyer. And,
Speaking of Kiss. No, it's killer. I mean, it's really killer. And the album, again, is on September 15th. And, you know, the guy who produced the record, who produces
right.
Anthrax and your solo records, our good friend Jay.
Mr. Rustin.
Yes. At dinner with him last night. And he said to me, he goes, you haven't heard the whole record yet. And I go, no. He goes, it's heavy. He goes, it's heavy. So was it a conscious thing for you, Corey, to go heavier from the first record?
I mean, a little bit, you know. I mean, the thing that we noticed when we took this out on the road, you know, because we were one of the first bands to kind of go back out on the road after, you know, the lockdown and quarantine, and we were doing the pod shows and whatnot.
People in bubbles, so like the weird. Flaming Lips dude, Corey.
But
was
we were
there.
So stoked, you know. I mean, it felt so good to be out on the road again that we didn't even care, you know. It just felt good to be playing in front of an audience. The thing that we noticed was that everything really kind of fit together. Like, you know, all the stuff from the first album really fit in context with like Slipknot stuff, Stone Sour stuff, the covers we were playing, the acoustic stuff. So I was like, man, okay, this, we're going to use this as the starting point, but now going forward, this is where we're going. This is where we came from. This is where we're going. So when I really took my time putting together and writing everything for this album, and deciding what was going to make it and what wasn't. Because, I mean, I had 30 songs to pick from. And we walked in with 26, if you include the covers that we did. And we had 18 originals that I was like, okay, these are the ones that we're going to really try and concentrate on. And then we pared that down to 13. And we kind of went with that, you know. So I wanted to make sure that everything that I've done in my career was represented. The heavy stuff, the hard rock stuff, the punk stuff, just everything, you know, the acoustic stuff. I wanted to make sure that when people heard it, they got everything that they would want from a Corey Taylor album.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, judging from the two tracks, they're killer. And I love that there's still melody in it too,
right,
which is what I always gravitate towards. And I know that's important. Did you learn? So it sounds like you also picked up on a lot of this touring the first record, right? Because you got that mixing in stuff from the rest of your catalog.
Right.
You kind of figured out what that balance was going to be for this record.
And, you know, I mean, credit to my wife and actually the guys in the band as well, man. They were like, you need to give people a little more, you know, because I was reticent to dip too much into Slipknot and Stone Sour, but they were like, dude, you help do that, you know, like, get, you know, if people want, you know, there's certain songs that maybe you never get to play, like we're playing Snuff now with Slipknot, but before that, you know, we weren't playing it. So it was like people wanted to hear that, you know, people wanted to see it, like they wanted stuff that kind of fit together like that. So I really kind of cherry picked everything and made it a great representation. And I think that really led to the album having that kind of reflection where it's still very diverse. It's still, I mean, there's so many boundaries that we're crossing and kind of trying to push, but at the same time, it feels like something that I would have put out in retrospect with, you know, with Stone Sour on one side and Slipknot on the other.
Yeah. The thing I love about the latest song, Post Traumatic Blues, which you can hear online right now, is the guitar trade-off.
Yeah.
Like, which is Zach and Christian, right?
Yeah,
trading
Zach
off.
Huge.
And that's killer. Like, I love dual guitar stuff. I love trade-off stuff.
Yeah.
And Scott, with you guys, I mean, I know John plays the bulk of the leads, but you guys will do some harmony stuff here and there. But you ever feel like, you ever have a desire to play more leads? Like, could you ever do like a full trade-off thing like that?
Yeah, but it would have to be more in the context of, let's say, the hard rock world. Like I could handle Ace Frehley level licks,
right,
or let's say Joe and Brad level, like that stuff. If you're talking about, you know, once you get into the metal or shredding type of, it's just not my forte.
Right.
Like,
you can do like Angus sometimes, right?
Yeah.
Or you could bring Revel out and he could be the third guitar player.
There you go.
I am much more, if I put my mind to it, I could play lead guitar in a hard rock, let's say. You know,
well, you did in Motor Sister a little bit, right?
No,
a little,
yeah. But
yeah,
the stuff that we've done on the side as well, you've handled a lot of that shit. It's really good.
If I really, but you know, it would also mean like, you know, I have to put in a lot of work, and who's got the time? I'm not going to at 60 decide I'm the lead guitar player now. What's your goal for 60? I'm going to be the next Nuno.
Yeah, like, there you go.
I mean,
what is? But Scott, was that like you already said? Angus was your guy.
Yeah.
Did that all trickle down from Angus that your thing was going to be? You're just going to be the master of the rhythm and the riff and just knock it out.
No, Tony and Malcolm.
Right.
That was it. Because even though Iommi, of course.
I mean, Malcolm. I meant to say Malcolm, not Angus. Right, I'm sorry. Right. Of course, Malcolm.
Even though Tony was the only guy in Black Sabbath playing guitar, he was doing both. But just for me, the riffs and his left hand.
Oh, dude.
With the finger cuts on
just,
him.
Yeah, and the way he picked and the way he played riffs and all that. And as a kid, when you're, for me, sitting in my room, learning how to play guitar, learning songs, up with a turntable slowed down to 16,
right?
You know, to learn how to play parts, it was just easier to learn a whole album's worth of chords. It would take to try and learn a solo would take days,
right?
Whereas I could have all the chords done and go, look, I could play all these songs. And for me, it was just a case of like, I'd rather sit and learn the songs, learn the chords, than spend all that time woodshedding and learning how to play the lead breaks, where some of my friends were doing that too.
Right.
So I was like, all right, you play the leads, I'll play the chords.
Were you totally self-taught, Scott?
I had lessons the first few months, just long enough so my guitar teacher could tell my parents, he's taking it seriously. You could get him an electric guitar. It's not going to sit in the corner and collect dust, because nice. I had some crappy acoustic.
Right.
And as soon as they got me, I got a Telecaster Deluxe, and as soon as I got that, I said, I don't want to take lessons anymore. Yeah. And they were like, what? And I'm like, no, I want to learn on my own. I don't need this guy to, like, and that was it.
Now, Corey, you're knocking out guitar, too, in this band. So at times, it's an Outlaws-esque three-guitar assault.
That's awesome, yeah.
Molly Hatchet level.
Iron Maiden.
Iron That's Maiden, right. Well.
Yeah. Foo Fighters.
In my opinion. What? Yeah, I can say it. You don't have to say it. Iron Maiden doesn't need three guitars, but that's all I was going to say. The Dancing with the Stars guy can, you know.
Yeah, don't get
just,
me started.
It's just a little much. I'm sure he's quite talented. No, but it's dancy. But you in your solo thing doing three guitars.
Right.
I mean, what is your prowess as a guitar player? I never really knew.
I'm kind of on the same wavelength with Scott. You know, I mean, a lot of people don't realize when I first started Stone Sour, I everything I kind of have done in the past has been out of necessity. When I first started kind of doing bands, I was always either the drummer or the singer, because I was always better than both people that we usually had on one or the other, and I kind of had to, you know, get off the pot at some point, you know, and figure it out. So I was like, look, I just want to be the singer. And then
were you always
the
singer? Did you discover you were a singer later?
I always knew I was a singer, but I didn't realize that I wanted to be the singer until I was with a couple of outfits that just the singer was bad. And I was like, nah, I don't know. And I was doing backups, and I was like, why am I doing backups? He sounds horrible. This is how do I harmonize to a vacuum cleaner, for God's sakes? You know, it's not working. But I learned guitar out of necessity because I wanted to write songs, you know, and then I found myself dipping my toe into lead and then becoming the lead player for Stone Sour when we first got together, because none of the lead players that we found were actually really that good. So, and this is back like 92, like really, really early. But then again, I was like, you know what? I just want to sing. I don't want to really play lead and guitar anymore. So that's kind of where I stopped, because I enjoyed playing rhythm more, to be honest. Like there's more passion in bashing out a riff and throwing yourself into playing it live, especially when you're on stage, than I get from sitting down and really having to concentrate. Because to me, I can't just rip it off like, you know, guys like Vi or Fraley, you know, where it's just so easy for them. I really have to, I'm necking the whole time. Like, and I do the solo on Beyond, man. And I get so nervous before that solo that I'm just like, okay, don't butcher it. I butchered it. God damn it, I butchered it. You know, and then I'm just ruined for the whole show.
Well, that answers my question. So on your solo records, you're playing guitar.
I did. Yeah. I'm playing most of the rhythm. There's a couple songs that I don't. But for the most part, even when we were recording it, I would play rhythm. So we would have that kind of collision of guitars going in, because we recorded almost everything live. So instead of doing like a ton of like overdubs and stuff, we just got it in one spot. You know, we mic'd a bunch of different amps, so we had different tones to play with, but then we tracked it together as it, you know, so we would get that live sound, you know.
Scott, didn't you, when Corey was making the record in Vegas, didn't you guys roll through there?
Yeah, they,
we did.
You visited the studio, right?
Frank, Revel and I and Frankie came by, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm thinking, like, you know, the other thing I always think of when I think of singers, like, of course, people think of you as a singer predominantly, Corey. Right. But I've talked to so many singers who actually just kind of stumbled into being the singer frontman,
right.
Didn't really intend to do that. A guy that always immediately comes to mind, it blows my mind that he's like kind of a reluctant singer frontman, is Miles Kennedy.
Right.
Miles' trip is totally guitar playing.
Yeah.
Like both Tremonti and Slash have said to me, that guy's as good or better than me.
Yeah.
And people don't realize it, and Slash, he doesn't even barely play guitar.
Right.
But so it's kind of interesting, like, you know, Miles like, oh, I just got this voice, people want me to sing.
Yeah.
But it's like his trip is he's a total guitar nerd.
Right.
Which he just, Scott, can you sing? I mean, I know you'd shout some backing vocals on Anthrax, but could you sing lead vocal on any, have you ever?
Well, if like cover songs like Protest and Survive from Discharge, or I mean,
hardcore.
I'm yelling. Yeah. Right. But I can sing. I can. And it's something I don't practice enough. But when the time comes and I actually do need to do something that isn't just shouting, I can. There's my 60th is coming up the end of the year, and part of that's going to be a big concert and which Corey's involved in and Revel, and you will, invites are going out soon anyway, and there's a few things on the set list because it's kind of like a chronological history of everything I loved since I was a little kid, and of course picking one song from each band is like impossible,
right.
But there are a few things where I'm going to actually have to sing on, not whole songs, but backup parts that I just really love where it's people actually singing. And I'm going to try it, not just on the night. Like, I'm going to work up to it and hopefully be able to actually do it.
That's
like,
awesome.
Hey Bulldog from the Beatles is,
oh, dude,
I picked that song and I want to sing Lennon's parts. Like, and I'm going to, I,
that's a tricky,
I mean,
tune.
Yeah.
Too,
yeah.
Man.
Why not go for it? It's 60. What do you got
me,
to lose?
You know, I mean, that whole part, I'm going
to
sing that.
Revel has a question.
You're
for
doing Elton John. You're singing an Elton John song, right? With Mom.
Yeah. Pearl and I are going to duet on Don't Go Breaking My Heart.
Oh,
dude, that's
nice.
That's awesome. Okay.
And by the way, your birthday, for those that don't know, is New Year's Eve, right?
Yes.
Right. So it's a New Year's Eve slash, it's your birthday party. Obviously, it's a big one, 60.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You got a year on me there, but that's huge, you know? And obviously, it happens. Are you actually going to do it on New Year's Eve?
Yes.
Actually on your birthday.
Yes.
All right. Very cool. And Corey, you got shows coming up.
Yeah,
With is Slipknot? Are you still doing Slipknot stuff?
We've
is
only
still
got
dates?
We've only got a couple of shows left this year. Right? We're doing the Blue Ridge Festival. I'm actually doing it with both. To be honest, I'm doing Blue Ridge
not the
one
same
night.
Day.
No, not the same day. No, check this out because it was added in the middle, and I looked at the schedule and I, oh my god, how am I going to do this? So I play in Cleveland on the night before Slipknot plays Blue Ridge. I then get on a flight, I fly in, the next day I do Blue Ridge, the next day I fly in to Cincy and play with CMFT, and then I do Blue Ridge again.
Back to Blue Ridge.
Yes.
Oh my God.
I am going to die. Like, I'm not, I don't
know.
When
is this? How far away is this?
This is first week of September. So,
I just worry about the heat factor.
I've been killing myself in a mask for years. I'll be fine. You know, I only have to do one of those nights in a mask. I'll be okay. But I'm like sitting here going, oh my god,
that's
I'm
intense.
49. How am I gonna do
that? That's
this?
Gotta be great though for you with your solo thing above the other benefits of it. To be able to go out there, just, you know, throw on
t-shirt, jeans,
shorts,
it's
whatever.
The best. But the crazy thing is I've injured myself just as many times doing Stone Sour and solo stuff as I have with Slipknot, man. It's like I tore the muscle off my calf at the first song at Carolina Rebellion in 2018. The first song, I stepped on stage with Stone Sour, and I went, "How's everybody going?" And I ran, and it just went, poof, and I I thought somebody had shot me in the leg, right. Dude. It was crazy.
Ugh.
And I mean, they were like, I mean, there's nothing we can do. It's just going to heal itself. But, you know, and I mean, I had a bruise that went all the way down. I had to walk with a cane. It was crazy, dude. And I was just like, I'm stumbling around going, I look cool, don't I? But I finished the show. Like, I mean, what are you going to do, you know?
Yeah, well, you basically are going to really start here. Slipknot's going to kind of start moving to the back now because you're really going to start going out with the solo
with
stuff.
With CMFT, yeah.
Yeah, because I know I host Rocklahoma every year. I think you're on that with your
with
CMFT.
The tour starts August 25th in Denver. And we go till October 7th, actually, which is Aftershock. So it's the day after my anniversary.
And now that you have two albums with this group and to pull from, mm-hmm. are you still going to do the same amount of stuff from whether it be Slipknot or Stone Sour? Are you still going to spike that in?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, and the cool thing is that I can kind of move stuff around and pull stuff out and put in stuff that maybe I haven't played in a while, you know, which would be really cool because, I mean, obviously there's the usual suspects like Bother and Through Glass that people want to hear. And I've been really trying to keep it to the stuff that either I wrote or I co-wrote with, you know, with both bands. But there's also some stuff that people, you know, that I haven't played in years that a lot of people like want to hear. So I'm thinking about throwing Tumult back in the set, which is something that I wrote years ago with one of our old guitar players from Stone Sour, and it was a great closer, and people just really want to hear us play it again, so I'm bringing it back.
There's going to be the Elder in full set.
Hey,
I told him he should start. Throne, he should play Fanfare over
dude,
the PA.
No, you don't.
And that should be the intro.
You have no idea, dude.
Did you cover an Elder song? Because you said you did covers. You won't.
We've
tell
talked
me
about it. Well, yeah, we well
just
we've
a boy.
Not, we've not boy. We've not covered. We've not covered an Elder song. Let's
you
put
haven't
it that way. No, but
Mr. Blackwell, I could hear you doing.
Oh God, no! Because
I could hear you doing that big time.
You know, we keep talking about, oh God damn it, what's it's not Odyssey, it's the heavy one.
The Oath.
So
but that would be the expected
every
one.
Time we get in a room together, me, Throne, and Tooch, we just immediately
great
start
riff
playing. And it sounds rad, but we can't get Dustin to play. He's just like, nope. Now,
and you got to do that falsetto-y voice he sings that whole song in.
It's tough, dude. I'd have to open with that because once I start screaming, the falsetto goes away. I mean, it's crazy, though.
Hey, Scott, is there any Anthrax stuff? Anything you, because we're going to do a quick break and we'll come back. We'll finish up and let people call in and talk to you guys.
Uh-huh.
Is there anything you want to, you know, push out before we go to the break and talk to the callers? You got other stuff going on? I mean, is there anything going on with like Motor Sister? I know you were doing stuff with Pearl. She was playing some shows. Anything you want to hit?
She just played. She's got a duet with Cody Jinx that they did two songs together, actually, that's coming out on Cody's record later this year. I can't really talk about too much of that now, but it's pretty freaking cool. We have Bungle dates next month.
Oh, are you playing with Mr. Bungle too? Woo! I forgot about
that.
Yeah,
we have East Coast dates, and then like up to Montreal, Toronto, Detroit, Chicago. We finish at Riot Fest in Chicago.
Dude, that'll be sick.
So yeah, we finally get back and play a bunch of cities that Bungle hasn't been to in 20-something years. So those would be fun. You could just find Mr. Bungle on Instagram or the Ipecac website to check that out. And, making an Anthrax record. My focus is really, really getting the lyrics done on this Anthrax record. And like I said earlier, hopefully getting all the recording wrapped up by the end of the year.
Nice.
So, you know, with an expectation of we would have an album out for next summer. You know, probably songs before that, but the full thing come out at some point, you know, next summer.
So no Anthrax shows at all on the books until that's done?
There's stuff that's not confirmed yet, but there will be, I think, stuff before that, yes.
And the last thing for each of you, because I haven't yet, but I'm pretty sure Rocklahoma will be the first time I do, but I've not seen what I call Pantera 2.0 with Charlie and Zach that's out there right now.
Oh, yeah.
You both seen it?
Oh, yeah.
And your thoughts, Scott?
Yeah, it was great. We actually saw it. Bungle played on Knotfest in Chile, and Pantera was on that as well, albeit without Rex, because that's when Rex got COVID.
Right, he had COVID.
They sent him home. But still, it still 40,000 people in a stadium in Santiago and getting to hear those songs. And I would say a large percentage of that crowd had never gotten to see Pantera.
Yep. Yeah.
Because of the looking out at the age of the audience. And just a mind-blowing moment. Just so much emotion.
And it
emotion.
Was without Rex. Did you have seen him with Rex?
Yes.
No, I haven't seen it with Rex.
I saw it at Grass Pop.
Wow.
So because they were on right before us at Grass Pop just this year.
Right.
And I hadn't seen them because we were flying in and out, so I didn't get to see them on that run, that South American run.
Right.
And, dude, me and Alicia ran out to the front of house, and I didn't even care. I was like, I'm watching this, you know? And I was so stoked, and my expectations were really high, dude, and they sounded incredible. Like, I was so stoked. There's probably a bunch of fan shot video of me singing along and jumping around like an idiot. I was so stoked. And they sounded so great, dude. Phil looks great. He's having a great time. I was just, you know, we all know the story. And to see them get up there and to feel that positive energy that hasn't been felt around that in so long, dude. I'm starting to get emotional about it now. I mean, it just felt really good to see our buddies up there. And this is absolute honesty, really doing justice. I mean, it sounds really, really good.
Yeah. Speaking of Miles Kennedy, he, about a month ago, I had a text from him and he's like, dude, I just had to text you. I go, what's up? He goes, some festival in Europe somewhere. He's like, I'm standing on Alter Bridge just played. He goes, and I'm standing on the side of the stage. He goes, and I'm watching Pantera.
Right.
He goes, and I am like speechless at how amazing this is.
Awesome.
He goes, and I just had to text somebody and I had to text you. And I was like, well, I haven't seen it yet, that but works. I'm glad you did. He's like, dude. And that's it. I go, enjoy and we'll talk.
I talked to Rex a couple of weeks ago and Corey mentioned positive energy and the short conversation we had on the phone was, I hadn't heard him like that in a long time. He's so happy.
Yeah.
He's feeling so good physically, mentally, everything.
On the last tour, when you played Albuquerque, he came up and played songs with you.
That's right. In February, he came out to the show he came to the show.
Does
and
he
got
live
up.
In New Mexico now?
Yeah.
I heard that, right?
Yeah, and he got up and did Only with us.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
oh,
at the Albuquerque
wow,
show.
Really?
Yeah. Oh. We asked him, what do you want? He's like, oh, I'm coming to the show. Let's do something like old days. And we said, what do you want to play? He goes, I want to fucking do Only, man. And like we're like, yes.
And you guys were doing huge. That was the one Bush era song you were doing.
Right.
And it was huge. It was great. It was so great to see him. He's just in a really, really good place. Really positive.
Yeah,
there's a really good feeling around the whole thing. I'm so happy for Charlie. I feel like even though I've been in a band with Charlie since 1983, and you talked earlier about Joey not getting credit. Charlie's another guy. All these decades, I feel like he's never really gotten the credit of what that guy is as a drummer, as a songwriter, as a musician, as a person. And I'm so glad people are really getting to see him in this light.
Yeah. Awesome.
And another cool thing about that show was Rex was there and he was backstage. And one of his guitars was backstage, and I was playing Pantera riffs.
Oh, yeah?
And Rex was like...
Rex was blown
right
away.
On. Nice.
I'll have to get into it with Rex. Football season starting soon, so he and I go out with Giants and Cowboys, so I'm going to dig in with Rex at that point, hopefully.
Right. Hi, I'm Ariana Maddox. You probably know me from TV, or maybe you read my best-selling book and tried one of my amazing cocktails, or maybe you saw me on Broadway. What I can say is following dreams is kind of my thing, but of all the things I'm lucky enough to get to do, the thing that I get asked about the most are my shoes. What's my secret? DSW. DSW is the best place to get all the shoes you need from brands you love. Trust me, I'm obsessed. In fact, I love DSW so much, I've teamed up with them to create a collection of shoes from must-have sandals to super cool sneakers that are guaranteed to get compliments. Because if I've learned anything, it's that if you've got big dreams to follow, you're gonna need some really great shoes. Find the shoes of your dreams when you shop my new collection now at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Is there such a thing as a traveler? Not a Delta. because we know on one flight, Mike in 8C prefers reality TV to reality. So we provide more than 1,000 hours of in-flight entertainment. While on the flight after, 8C is occupied by Jen, whose favorite snack is tea. That's why we provide fast, free Delta Sync Wi-Fi available for SkyMiles members, because at Delta, we know. Refill? Everyone flies their own way. Delta, keep climbing. Free Wi-Fi available on most domestic flights. Terms of use apply.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Few minutes left here on a Wednesday, live from Los Angeles with Corey Taylor in studio. Again, the new album, his second with his solo project, CMF2, is out everywhere September 15th. You can do all the pre-order stuff if you'd like. Two singles out now, Beyond and Post Traumatic Blues, both with videos that you can see on YouTube. You going to hit with the third song before it hits?
Talking about it, yeah. We're trying to figure out which one it's going to be. There's a couple of ones that are really kind of in contention. I know that the UK wants to drop one specifically for them this month. So we're kind of talking about that, but... right now, yeah, we're just kind of still trying to figure out what the next move is going to be. But I mean, which is great because Beyond still is climbing, like it's doing really well. It just cracked the top 10 on Active Rock. Yeah,
wow,
which
very
is
cool.
Crazy. Yeah, man, we're really stoked.
And we talked about when you were on from my place in Vegas, the video, because
right.
that you did that abandoned water park,
yeah.
And we talked about all that. If you guys missed that conversation, it's on the app. You can go listen to it. But we had a great talk about the video. Do you have another video done? Yeah,
not
for
yet.
Another song,
not, well,
you haven't shot anything yet.
We do, but I can't talk about it.
But you did shoot another video for
a
song.
Yeah, yeah.
So you got that coming.
Yeah.
Okay. And the other thing during the commercial break, before we grab a couple calls, which I admit I'm not well versed in this area, but the whole horror thing and
right.
the monsters and all that, you have your own horror convention? Is
I
that
have,
what you're
well,
saying?
Not only that, but I have my own brand. I bought the legacy horror brand, Famous Monsters of Filmland, which anybody, you know, me and Scott, obviously, we grew up reading it. It was started by Forrest Ackerman back in the 50s. It was the first real horror magazine dedicated to the fandom and to really celebrating everything, not only in front of the camera, but behind the scenes. You know, it was like really big on that. And I was, me and my partner, Eben, were able to buy that.
I didn't know what it was, but Scott was like, as soon as you see the logo, you'll recognize
exactly.
it. I just did. He showed it to me.
It's inspired so many people in so many different, you know, walks of life and genres and whatnot. And we were able to kind of pick it up, and we're really going to launch it and kind of set it into orbit again. And we're doing our first Famous Monsters convention, October 13th to the 15th. Scott's going to be there. I'm going to be there. The Osbournes are going to be there. It's going to be,
where is this?
This is it. God, where is it?
King of Prussia, Pennsylvania.
That's
okay.
it. Yeah. Yeah.
Outside of Philly,
which is kind of it's our homage to, you know, everything out of Penn State. You know, obviously Romero did a lot of his stuff outside of Pittsburgh and whatnot. Savini still lives there. Like, it's kind of like the heartbeat to us of horror, you know? So it's going to be
when you
really
say
cool.
the Osbournes are doing your thing, Ozzy is going to show as well?
Yep.
Wow.
Yes.
That's pretty cool.
And that's, I mean, we're really, really honored to have them. I mean, when this was something that we really wanted to make special. And, you know, Sharon and Ozzy and Jack, I mean, they were all really, really stoked. I think Sid and Kelly are going to be there as well, but don't quote me on that. Okay. Obviously, they just had their baby, so But it's going to be a big old family reunion, man. Wow. Like, we're stoked.
Wow. All right, cool.
You just mentioned Pittsburgh. I forgot. I'm going to be at the Steel City.
Oh, yeah, dude.
Steel City Con in Monroeville, Pennsylvania, right outside of Pittsburgh on the August 11th, 12th, and 13th. And that's where they filmed the Night of the Living Dead and Dawn of the Dead. And that's where George Romero is from, and Tom Savini and Greg Nicotero and all those cats.
That's a really good one, too, because I've done it. I did it last year. And cool. It's a really cool one.
All-time favorite horror movie, Scott?
God. It's either I'll just say The Exorcist.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Corey?
Halloween 78.
Halloween 78. Mm-hmm. All time favorite Kiss record, Scott?
Dressed to Kill.
Really?
Yes.
I mean, I love the songs on that.
Not counting the live albums, otherwise
right.
I would say.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Dressed
right.
to Kill.
Wow. But I didn't, you don't hear that often.
It's true.
Corey?
Love Gun, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Also interesting.
What's yours?
Rock and roll over.
Yeah. I knew that.
Right.
By a hair. I mean, they're all great. I mean, it's first six and impossible.
Yeah, but, I mean, there's really no wrong answer.
On the first six, no. But it's Rock and Roll Over is just it's so raw.
It's great.
And it's just, it's that, you know, where Destroyer was so polished. And I think Love Gun gets looked past a little bit. I think it's a much better record than, for whatever reason, it kind of gets glossed over. But
right.
I don't know. Rock and Roll Over is just where every element of what was Kiss live raw and came from. People forget that. I didn't even realize this because Rock and Roll Over was the new album when I got into Kiss at 12.
Okay.
But I bought Destroyer first.
Right.
But I didn't realize this until I read some books. There was a lot of backlash to Destroyer after it came out when it was new.
Because
it was so polished orchestrated. And where is this, you know, band coming off of Alive? Like, what is this?
Right.
So that Rock and Roll Over was actually a reaction to that even though Destroyer was successful.
Right.
Remember, the biggest song on it was a ballad without even anybody on it.
Right. But then you look at Great Expectations, which is such a left turn. Like, it's even more weird than Beth.
Yeah,
you know?
I love that. I mean, I love that.
It's Destroyer, no doubt. But it's like you could see how in that moment, If Kiss finally breaks off of Alive,
right,
and now, okay, here comes that studio record, and you get that, you're like, wait a minute. So they were, like, freaked out, like, and it was like, well, we better get back to doing basically a live in the studio record, which is what Rock and Roll Over was. It was done live in a theater, basically. Right. Anyway, again, we could go to... we will do a whole week of Kiss.
Anybody want to ask Kiss questions, call into the trunk line.
Cassandra in New York has been waiting for a long time. Cassandra, you're on with Corey Taylor and Scott Ian.
Hi, everyone. Thanks again.
Hi.
Paul. I appreciate it. Love the show. Listen, I have questions for Corey. You're so welcome. But I just wanted to say to Scott, listen, I saw Anthrax with BLS at the Fillmore in Charlotte last August, and that was an awesome version of the song Keep It in the Family that you guys did. Really enjoyed the show. You killed it. Thanks so much. Hope to see you guys again next time you come through New York. All right.
Thank you so much.
Now, Corey, you're so very welcome. Listen, I'm a huge fan. I've seen all three of your bands perform, and I've seen the Cherry Bombs. Let me tell you, your wife kills it. She does a phenomenal job, and we have
Smoke Shack.
I'm so psyched to see that. Jesus, I can't wait. My birthday is like at the same time. But listen, I teach in Westchester County, New York, and my classroom is decorated with Slipknot decor. And I play music for all three of your bands to my students, and they love it. I even wear the T-shirts to school. Thank God my principal is lenient with that. But listen, here are my questions for you. One, I just wanted to know, who is your favorite artist to collaborate with and why? And maybe, you know, who might you like to work with in the future? And finally, like, are there any future plans for Stone Sour?
Okay, I'm going to answer the first. Well, I'll answer the second one first. There are... currently no plans to work with Stone Sour right now. That's kind of on indefinite hold for a while. But the answer to the first part of your question, my favorite person, I mean, I've been really stoked and privileged to work with a lot of great people. So I kind of have to, I always go, my standby is always to go with the first, which was Max. Being on the first the second Soulfly album was a treat because
Max Cavalera.
Yeah, Max Cavalera, and we did Jump the Fuck Up together. And I mean, I wasn't anybody yet, you know, like I was, it was just me and I was just a fan and I'm standing next to Max and we're making a song together. And to this day, I mean, he was so gracious. Everybody was really, really cool. And I got to hang out with this psychopath, Toby Wright, who was producing it at the time. And we just had a blast, man. And then I went and played the show in Phoenix because we were in Phoenix at the Celebrity, at the that sure, show in the round. And it was such a famous theater. And it's just one of my favorite days that I ever had at as we were first starting out. So that's the one I always kind of go to. As far as people I would love to collaborate with, I mean, I have a list as longer than my body, for God's sakes. I mean, I'd love to do something with Jelly Roll, who's a newer artist, and he's really, really cool. But I'd also love to do something with, you know, the gentleman sitting in this room with me, man. I'd love to do something with Anthrax someday, like do a tune together.
Well, you almost joined them.
I know.
You're almost in the band.
And that's one of the reasons why I would love to do at least one song. Like, I feel like that would be full circle, man. Yes. Like, I think it'd be just to be able to be on a tune with you guys and then singing with Joey would be sick. That's my truncated. Truncated list.
Yeah. Just a few more minutes before we have to end. Here is Charles in West Virginia. Go ahead, Charles. You're on the air.
Hey, guys. Thanks for all you do. Questions for Scott. Hey, yes. I know no one wants to mess up the dynamic in Anthrax now. We all love what you're doing. But I might have had this question answered with his exclusion from that 40th anniversary, webcast, whatever, the big thing you did on the web there, which is awesome. But could there ever be a possible tour where you guys do a headline and one of the openers, like maybe one or two bands, one of the bands be Armory Saint and then bring Bush out for like, you know, do only. And then Joey and Bush do Ball of Confusion and then come back out with just Joey. Is there ever a possibility? That'd be awesome.
Maybe.
It's an interesting idea. I get where he's going with the crossover there and Armored Saint doing their own thing before. And, of course, there was the one record where they both sang on.
Yeah. Answer for that is we're all friends. We all get along really well, maybe that'll happen for our 50th, which, oddly enough, is only 8 years away.
So, Scott's going to be 70 years old.
My answer is, hey, it's not outside the realms of possibility. Right. Someday. It's not going to happen next year.
Yeah.
But who knows?
There you go, Charles. Here's Derek in Tennessee. Go ahead, Derek.
Hey. How are you guys doing?
Hey, real quick. Almost out of time. Go ahead.
All right. Yeah, I'll be quick. Scott, I've skated your skateboard decks for years. I'm 46 years old. I still skateboard, and I've been a professional drummer for many years. I'm on the road all the time. I love all your music. Now,
thank you.
My question is, where and how or when will we get the acoustic of the live in London or your acoustic stuff?
Huh?
Who are you talking to? You're talking to Corey, right? Scott's like, what, Corey, my acoustic?
Like, what? Did I miss a couple of years of my life?
That one's for Corey. Go ahead.
Corey on the acoustic stuff, yes.
Sorry. Yeah. Actually, it's funny you bring that up. I've actually been talking to my new label, BMG, about actually releasing that. It's something I've been trying to do for a while. You can find it on YouTube. You can find the whole thing out there. It's online. It's looking like we're going to be able to release that on probably on Decibel Cooper,
which is the name of the label.
That's my imprint, Decibel Cooper.
Are you going to put out bands on there too?
I'm thinking about it. Yeah.
Your son's in a band. Are you
going
to put?
Yeah. Well, they've got so much momentum going on right now, and they're doing their own thing. That like I wouldn't want. It's hard enough having to live under the shadow of me and Slipknot and all of that stuff. If I, you know,
right,
and with the whole thing about Nepo babies and weirdness, like I like the fact that they're doing it on their own. We've made them do it on their own. I would never want to kind of, you know, push them forward while also holding one of their legs, you know, I would never want to do that.
Revel's ready to take over the world at 12.
Yes.
Right. Well,
he's
plays
every instrument. He's ready to go. He was giving us his whole resume before you got here.
Once you get something that I could hear and we can talk about, man, I'm all about it, you know? So yeah, I'm looking for stuff to possibly put out. And, you know, I just, all I'm trying to do is put my money where my mouth is, because I just want to put out rad stuff. It doesn't matter what genre, it doesn't matter who it is. I just want to put it out and put good music out there and know that I had a hand in doing it.
Yeah. I got to wrap up. That's what the music means. We are done for today. We're done from LA. I'll be back live with you tomorrow. We'll do that throwdown, first Cars versus first Boston. That's going to be awesome. 3 o'clock Eastern. Well, I'll get Scott and Corey's picks right now off the air, and I'll share them on air tomorrow for their picks on this, but that's going to be a lot of fun. 3 o'clock Eastern live tomorrow here on 103. Again, pre-order right now the second Corey Taylor album, CMF2, out September 15th. Scott ran down all the stuff he's got, and it's really Revel's world. We're just living in it. It's all about the future. He's ready to take over playing every instrument.
Well, fun day there in LA for sure. Scott Ian, an old friend, thanks to his son. His son is super talented at just 12. Keep an eye on what he's doing, man. That's the future right there. And, of course, Scott working on new Anthrax music, a bunch of different stuff he has going on. Corey super busy as well with his own career, with his solo artist stuff, and also, of course, with Slipknot from time to time as well. Again, if you have SiriusXM, you can watch that entire interview on video. That is now available on the app. If you don't have SiriusXM, please join us. Get a free subscription. Try it out for 3 months. Again, SiriusXM.com/EddieTrunk. No credit card required. And you can sample what you're missing with a daily rock talk show in Trunk Nation, Monday through Friday, 3 to 5 Eastern Time on Faction Talk Channel 103. Be sure to follow me on social media at Eddie Trunk, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook page. Next appearance is the 18th of August, Rolling Meadows, Illinois. I'll be hosting a show at Rep's Place featuring local band The Bites. Really cool, exciting new young rock band. And looking forward to seeing them and seeing you if you happen to be in that part of the country. And then after that, it's Rocklahoma creeping up, almost here. Labor Day weekend in Pryor, Oklahoma. Hosted that every year since 07. Happy to be back doing it once again. Thank you all for listening to the podcast. I hope you catch me on the radio each and every day, and I'll see you out and about. Take care. Have a good one.
Is there such a thing as a traveler? Not a Delta. Because we know on one flight, Mike in 8C prefers reality TV to reality. So we provide more than 1,000 hours of in-flight entertainment. While on the flight after, 8C is occupied by Jen, whose favorite snack is tea. That's why we provide fast, free Delta Sync Wi-Fi available for SkyMiles members. Because at Delta, we know.
Refill?
Everyone flies their own way. Delta, keep climbing. Free Wi-Fi available on most domestic flights. Terms of use apply.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.